Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate. Today, earlier this week, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court vacated a lower court's ruling on the voter ID law there. It's the latest in a string of rulings this summer on voter ID laws. Joining me now for a look at whether these laws could affect the vote in November is Richard L. Hassan. He's Chancellor Professor of Law and Political Science at the University of California Irvine School of Law. He's the author of The Voting Wars, From Florida 2000 to the Next Election Meltdown, which is published by Yale University Press. I'm pleased to welcome him today to our Backstory segment. Hi there.
Good to be with you.
Thank you, Rick. What does this mean? This week's ruling mean for Pennsylvania voters?
Well, it means a lot more waiting. And it also means that it's not going to be clear until maybe a week or two before the election whether or not people are going to need ID. And so I think the advice I would give to anyone in Pennsylvania who doesn't have the right ID and would like to vote is you better go out and try and get that ID right now while this uncertainty swirls around this case.
There are 9 states that have voter ID laws which require voters to show a photo ID. Is Pennsylvania law similar to the ones that were under review in Texas and South Carolina?
Well, you know, what's happened is since the mid-2000s, we've seen a number of states adopt these new restrictive voter ID laws. With the exception of Rhode Island, in all the other states, these laws are passed with the support of Republicans and opposed by Democrats. They differ in their details. Texas's law was just rejected by a 3-judge court in Washington, D.C., but Texas, unlike Pennsylvania, is subject to a provision of the Voting Rights Act called Section 5, which requires states with a history of discrimination in, on the basis of race and voting to get permission before they change their laws. And so the Texas law, which in some ways is stricter than the Pennsylvania law, doesn't say much about whether the Pennsylvania law will ultimately be upheld or struck down.
Did you watch the conventions this year?
I saw some of the convention, yes.
And when South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley mentioned the voter ID law in her speech during the Republican National Convention, got a huge amount of applause from the delegates. What were your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. In my book, The Voting Wars, I talk about why it is that since 2000 we've seen these fights over our election rules. And one of the things I say is that aside from the fact that these rules could potentially affect the number of Democratic voters on the margin, I think in numbers a lot smaller than some Democrats claim, the real motivation, or maybe a major motivation for why Republicans push these laws so hard is that it's a great wedge issue for them. That is, it's a way to get the base excited, to claim that Democrats are stealing votes, and to fundraise. And so we've seen Republicans try and fundraise off of these voter ID rejections by the courts. And on the other side, you see Democrats doing the same thing, Democrats saying that Republicans are trying to suppress the vote, trying to get turnout up in that way, and also trying to fundraise off what they claim is a pattern of voter suppression in these Republican states.
And is it my imagination, or do this interest in voter ID only come up within months of an election? It seems to me that, you know, talking about it after an election just might be a better way to have a reasonable conversation about it. But that doesn't seem to be the case, does it?
Well, you know, what happens is that the press and the public's attention only turns to these issues around election time. This stuff has been churning for years. It's just that Pennsylvania rushed one through close to the time of the election. The judge held a trial, and it was just earlier this week that the state Supreme Court finally got around to issuing its decision and said, you know, we're not convinced that for 2012 voters are going to be able to get their hands on the IDs they need from the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation. So we want you, trial judge, to take another look at that and tell us, are people really going to be disenfranchised? But it looks like all of the 6 justices right now on the court seem to agree that voter ID will be fine in Pennsylvania so long as it's rolled out in time for a later election. And so part of the issue here is but one of timing, that there are something like 750,000 voters that the state of Pennsylvania said, at least as of a few months ago, didn't have the ID. And to get that those IDs into the hands of all of those voters is a very big task. And the state Supreme Court's not sure that the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation is up for the job.
Indiana's voter ID law went all the way to the Supreme Court in 2008, where it was upheld in a 6-3 decision in which the majority said that the law, which required a photo ID upon voting, didn't form a major barrier to casting a ballot. So why are all of these laws still being decided on a state and federal level?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. What the Supreme Court said in Crawford was that a facial challenge, that is a global challenge to the law, would fail if it was based on the U.S. Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. And the court left open the possibility, there were six justices, three dissenters and three justices in the middle, who said if there are particular groups of voters who have a big burden in getting the ID, they are constitutionally entitled to an exemption from those laws. And so left that issue open. In the Pennsylvania case, the claim was not made under the U.S. Constitution, but under the state constitution. Every state's constitution has its own rules about the right to vote and about equal protection, and the state Supreme Courts are not bound to give as little protection as the U.S. Constitution gives. They could give more. And so we've had, for example, in Missouri, the state Supreme Court struck down its voter ID law as a violation of the state constitution, and in Wisconsin, two trial court judges recently put Wisconsin's new voter ID law, which was just passed by the Republican legislature and signed by the Republican governor, on hold, and that's now pending, and we'll see what happens with that case.
And this Indiana vote with the Supreme Court in 2008 allows for voters who don't have an ID when they go to vote to actually fill out a provisional ballot and then come back to what, verify it within a couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, here's the funny thing about that. So if you say you're indigent, you're so poor you can't afford the documents you would need, like the birth certificate to prove who you are and get the ID. So you go to vote at your polling place, and then you have to go not at the polling place, it's not available at the polling place, but to the county seat. You have to go at your own expense within 10 days of the election to fill out a declaration of indigency. And you have to do this in every election. You can't do it just once, but it is something you have to do in each election. It looks pretty onerous. The thing is, it doesn't seem that there are too many voters in the state of Indiana who actually are so poor that they can't afford the documents to get the ID and actually want to vote. And so for those people who fit in this small category, it's a big burden, but we're not sure that there are many people who actually fit into this category.
You described a Republican-Democrat split in who's actually interested in these voter IDs and what the motivations are. Are there any actual voter ID laws that have been supported by Democrats?
Well, first of all, there are all kinds of laws that identify voters, which get bipartisan support. Here in California, you have to sign your name, and if you send in an absentee ballot, there's a signature match. What we're talking about here is the requirement that you show only a certain kind of photo ID. And so, you know, the states differ on what those can be. In Texas, for example, you couldn't show a student identification, but you could show a concealed weapons permit. And many Democrats view that as trying to discourage young voters who are more likely to vote Democratic from being able to vote. In Wisconsin, that law is now on hold, but the state initially took the position that student IDs would not be accepted because they didn't have an expiration date, and then the state colleges found a way to get the expiration dates on these IDs. And so it really is, you know, a fight state by state about these issues. And as I said, only in Rhode Island, where it seems that there was a fight within the Democratic Party, do you see Democrats actually voting to support ID. In Minnesota, the state legislature, which is a majority Republican, passed a voter ID bill. The governor, who's Democratic, refused to sign it, and now the issue of voter ID will be before the people through a constitutional amendment ballot measure to be voted on in November.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate. My guest is Richard Hassan. He's Chancellor's Professor of Law and Political Science at the University of California Irvine School of Law. He's the author of The Voting Wars, From Florida 2000 to the Next Election Meltdown. I've heard differing things about this, but from your perspective, is voter fraud a big issue these days? Are there really thousands and thousands of people who want to vote who really shouldn't be voting?
Well, you know, let's be very careful about our terms here. What you mean by voter fraud is that someone who is ineligible to vote or ineligible to vote multiple times is casting a ballot or is perhaps selling his or her vote. Does this happen? This does happen on occasion. When it does happen, it almost invariably seems to involve absentee ballots. Absentee ballots can be bought and sold, can be stolen, can be manipulated. And so we do see prosecutions every year for absentee ballot fraud. Absentee ballot fraud, at least of this vote-buying kind, is not at all affected by voter ID laws. The problem is not the person is impersonating someone else, but is selling a vote. And so if you ask what kind of fraud a voter ID law prevents, the primary kind of fraud it would prevent is impersonation fraud. So I go to the polls and I pretend that I'm you. Now, that's a very dumb way to try and steal an election. And I looked in my book over the last generation to find at least one election where impersonation fraud, impersonation voter fraud at the polls could have played a role in an election outcome. And I couldn't find a single case. You can find isolated single instances of impersonation fraud. I think by one count from the News 21 organization, there were 10 allegations in all of the states from 2000 to 2012, a very small number compared to hundreds and hundreds of absentee fraud cases. But again, not a single election where impersonation fraud was at issue in terms of changing an election outcome. So it does seem like it is aimed at the wrong problem. And if you're really serious about stopping voter fraud, the first thing you would do is make it much harder to use absentee ballots. But that is not on the agenda of those who've been pushing voter ID.
And on the other side, do voter ID laws prevent significant numbers of people from voting? Is it really stop people?
Yeah, here too I think we have to be very careful. There's no question, if you take a look at the Pennsylvania voter ID law, that it's inconveniencing a lot of people. Right? People have to go, if there are 750,000 people who have to go down to the Motor Vehicles Department, you know what a pain that can be, and fill out the forms and find the birth certificate and all of that. And so there will be some people who will be discouraged from voting because of this additional requirement. I wouldn't call that disenfranchisement. Others do call that disenfranchisement. I would focus on the much smaller number of people who, one, don't have the ID, two, can't get the underlying documents either because they're too poor or the documents don't exist, they've changed their name, they can't get the documentation that they need, and three, want to vote. And if you try and find the class of those people, it tends to be much smaller. In the Pennsylvania case, the trial judge said, you know, just taking a quick look at this for purposes of our preliminary ruling here, looks like there's more than 1%, which is what the state claims, of people who actually would be disenfranchised by this law and would have to find some way around it, but much less than the 9% of people claimed by the plaintiffs. So, again, part of it is definitional, and part of it is trying to figure out exactly what we mean by disenfranchisement.
You point out that often the problems with voting occur because of officials, not the law. So is all of the legal wrangling that we've seen in the news over the last few months a little beside the point if the outcome of these elections can be affected by the officials and lawyers after the fact?
Well, you know, voter ID is just one small piece of a greater battle, you know, that I term the voting war. Some of this is a turf war between state and local officials and federal officials, which have a very minor role in running our elections. Some of this is about incompetence. I tell the story of the person who was disenfranchised because the poll worker sent the voter to the wrong polling place because the poll worker believed that the number 798 in an address was an odd number. I mean, there are just legions of stories like this. And in Ohio, the Ohio Supreme Court said, if you vote in the wrong place because of poll worker error, tough luck, your vote doesn't count. And the Sixth Circuit is now deciding whether or not to uphold a federal court ruling.
Wow.
Which says that these kinds of wrong
yes.
precinct votes must be counted under the U.S. Constitution.
I've been speaking with Richard Hassan, Chancellor's Professor of Law and Political Science at the University of California Irvine School of Law. He is the author of The Voting Wars from Florida 2000 to the Next Election Meltdown, which is published by Yale University Press. We've been talking about voter ID laws on today's Backstory. Rick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.